Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Read with Michelle Martin.
Very excited to bring you a book and a conversation with an author behind a book that I've been telling a lot of people about, haven't been able to stop talking about it since I picked it up. The book is called Breathe, The New Science of a Lost Art, and it's by journalist James Nestor, journalist and author, a terrific popular science book that's already a bestseller, New York Times, LA Times, Wall Street Journal bestseller. What's it all about? Well, it's about breathing. And the book says you don't have to practice Tibetan Tummo breathing techniques to unlock the power of the breath. You know, Tibetan Tummo, that's where you see these videos of monks who are able to even, you know, melt the snow around them because they've mastered that method of using their breath to control their autonomous functions, you know, and increase their body temperature in frigid Himalayas. Well, James Nestor has written a fascinating book on the amazing things that breathing better can do for all of us. So you don't have to be an expert in breathing, but it does take us to fascinating conversations and encounters with people who are experts in the area. James says it'll take just 5.5 seconds of your time to breathe better. Well, on the in-breath and the out-breath, that is. This book is a 10-year personal investigation into breathing. It's going to be translated into 30 languages by next year. Just amazing. James Nestor joins us live now. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing really well. Thank you so much for joining us. So the book starts with an experiment. I wonder if you can share with listeners what happened when you investigated breathing through your mouth instead of your nose. So your nose was taped shut. What impact did this have on you?
I learned from researchers that about 25 to 50% of the modern population habitually breathes through its mouth, and that this is really causing a bunch of undue harm to us. So I asked them, I said, well, how quickly does this harm come on? And they didn't know. No one had tested it. So I was working with researchers and experts down at Stanford, and we developed an experiment in which they would plug my nose for 10 days, and I would just be breathing through my mouth. And we would be collecting data the whole way through. There was one other subject in the experiment as well.
And what was the impact on you in terms of your sleep, in terms of how you felt?
It was absolutely awful. We knew that it wasn't going to be a pleasure cruise, right? That is very clear from the science. But we didn't know it was going to be so drastic and come on so quickly. So my blood pressure shot up to as high as I've ever seen it. And within a single night, I started snoring. I went from not snoring at all to snoring an hour and a half during the night. And after a few days, I was snoring for 4 hours throughout the night. Who knew that the pathway through which we breathe air can affect snoring and even sleep apnea? I started choking on myself. And the other subject suffered the exact same thing.
That is so strange because most people don't think twice about switching to breathing from their mouth, you know. And that the time certainly when you think this is warranted when you're exercising, for example. But the basic premise behind this experiment was that breathing incorrectly can change things in a big way for your body.
Yeah, and just to be clear, this experiment wasn't some supersize me stunt. We were just lulling ourselves into a position that so much of the population already knew, but we were just measuring it with various instruments. So the point was to show people, and I learned this personally, I felt it in my own body for 10 days, just how deleterious it is to be breathing through the mouth. About 70% of the population breathes through its mouth during sleep. We get less oxygen this way. We make ourselves more susceptible to respiratory infections. We allow ourselves to not rest fully. I mean, this list goes on, and yet so many of us are breathing in this manner.
So your book talks about how breathing incorrectly can be linked with all sorts of maladies, from allergies to asthma. Did anything surprise you in terms of your research into this book about the effects of not breathing correctly? And what do we mean by that, breathing incorrectly?
Mm-hmm. So breathing is something that we do about 20,000 times a day, up to 25,000 times a day. And if we're struggling to do it at any time during that process, it is going to cause a bunch of undue wear and tear on our bodies. And eventually, our bodies are just going to break down. And we're seeing this all over the world, and especially in the Western world. When you're looking at healthy breathing during sleep, How many people have sleep apnea and snore? About 50% in the U.S., about 25%, up to 25% have sleep apnea. So this is not normal. And these things are having so many effects on our health. I had no idea that how we breathe affect metabolic disorders. It makes you more susceptible to diabetes. Who knew this? It's just so many of the chronic modern maladies are diseases of inflammation. And that's exactly what poor breathing can exacerbate.
So this book is terrific. It's been described as part scientific quest, part historical insight. There's a portion of your book that says our heads, the anatomy of our heads, have developed in ways that are bad for breathing. So James, wasn't evolution meant to make us more effective as a species? What is the link between how we've evolved and how we breathe today?
Well, that's what I learned in high school, which for me was a billion years ago. It's that evolution was supposed to be the survival of the fittest, right? We're growing stronger. We're growing faster. Totally incorrect. Evolution means change over time. And as a species, we're developing characteristics that are in no way advantageous for our long-term survival. And our mouths and our breathing is a great example of this. I spent months in laboratories looking at ancient skulls, and I talked to one of the leading experts in this field. She had never seen an ancient skull, a hunter-gatherer, with crooked teeth. Not one of them. All of our ancestors had perfectly straight teeth, whereas modern humans, about 90% of us, have some crookedness in our teeth. And when you have crooked teeth, that means you have a mouth that's too small for your face. And the other problem with that is that you have a smaller airway. It's harder to breathe. So our anatomy has significantly changed over the past few hundred years of industrialization and made it very hard for so many of us just to get an easy breath in and out.
What I like about this book is it's so easy to get through. It's chock full of insight, but it's written really beautifully. And I like also that there are simple ways that you share to remedy breathing incorrectly, so to speak. But I want to ask, how did you come to this 5.5 second rule for that perfect amount of time for the intake or the outtake of breath? Why 5.5 seconds?
I read a study about 20 years ago where some Italian researchers brought in some subjects and had them recite the Ave Maria, the Catholic prayer cycle of the Rosary, and then had them recite O Mani Padme Hum, the famous Buddhist mantra. And they noticed something. They noticed that to recite each of these prayers, it took about 5 to 6 seconds to exhale. When we're exhaling, we're reciting. And then there was a break of about 5 to 6 seconds. Which works out to about 5 to 6 breaths per minute. And not only in these two prayers, but they found this in Satan Nama, the Kundalini chant, and Om also had the same respiratory rate. And it turned out they placed sensors all over these people's bodies. And when we breathe this way, you can pray if you want, that's great, but just breathing at this rate, your blood pressure goes down, your heart rate goes down, you get more oxygen to the brain, and your body enters a state of coherence where it works at peak efficiency. So anyone can do this. This is free for everybody. And the researcher said at the end of the study, probably one of the reasons why so many cultures had practiced these prayers is because, yeah, these prayers were really healing. And it probably had to do a lot with how they were breathing while they were reciting these prayers.
Just wondrous. So you mentioned some of those experts, and your book also talks about how this ancient technology that seems to instinctively understand what breathing better means, a lot of it is rooted here in the East. And I just wonder, pre-COVID, did you visit us at all to learn from any Eastern experts on breathing?
I talked to dozens and dozens. I really had planned to go out to India. I was not able to. That is happening next year. Hopefully this pandemic will be over at that time. But I did extensive research in universities and found that India, really the Indus civilization, about 5,000 years ago, this was really the birthplace of yoga. And yoga, at its beginning, was a technology of breathing. There were no downward dogs. There were no poses. This was sitting and breathing. And it was fascinating to see these same methods, this technology of breathing, later be adopted by the ancient Chinese, who wrote books and books about the power of breathing, and then be adopted by other cultures. It seems like throughout the world, we've known about the stuff for so long. It's just modern humans have forgotten about it, at least in the recent times.
So fascinating. So your book talks about a choir director who helped patients with emphysema, that's a chronic lung disease. And I thought that was a wonderful anecdote because it went to the point of whether we can all boost our lung capacity regardless of age. What can you share with listeners on that point?
So there is a study called the Framingham Study that is a 70-year-long longitudinal study here looking at cardiac health. And they found the most accurate marker of lifespan, it wasn't genetics, it wasn't how often you exercise, it wasn't what food you ate, it was lung size and lung health. Larger lungs, healthier lungs meant a longer life. And so this researcher, this choral conductor, had found this way of allowing people to inhale fully and exhale fully. It's a simple yoga technique. He called it something else, you know. He called it breathing coordination. And he used this to allow singers to sing better, but then he got so popular that doctors along the East Coast asked him to come in and help people with emphysema. They didn't know what to do with these people. And so he was able to do what was considered medically impossible. He restored these people's breathing, and they were able to, so many of them were able to get up and go home better than any other therapy just by using their own natural bodies and their breath.
What an extraordinary book. I hope that many people pick this up. I'll quote the New York Times here. If you breathe, you need this book. James, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
James Nessa is a journalist, and you may have read his work in the New York Times. You may have also encountered his other terrific book, Deep, which is about free diving. I loved it. And we've been talking to James Nessa about his latest book. It was published this year, called Breathe, The New Science of a Lost Art, available at all good bookstores here in Singapore and, of course, online.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.